Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Hey, happy Saturday, everybody. Today we are revisiting a history mystery, and that's the case of the Flannan Isles disappearance, in which several lighthouse keepers all simply vanished.
We will probably never know exactly what happened to these men, but this episode gets into some of the possible causes that have been proposed over the years.
Enjoy.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. My name is Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And today we're going to talk about another maritime mystery.
Yay.
Which I know a lot of our listeners have written when we've talked about shipwrecks and they really enjoy them. But this one does not involve a ship. Well, it involves them, but in a secondary sort of way. It doesn't center around a ship at all, but in fact, a lighthouse.
Yes.
So just for a little bit of background, the Flannan Islands, also called the Flannan Isles, are named after a 6th century Irish bishop who is storied to have brought good fortune to everything and everyone he touched. And the Flannan Isles, which are off the coast of Scotland, have been rumored for centuries to be haunted by either sea spirits or other supernatural powers. But the event that we're talking about today is an incident that happened in 1900.
Construction of the Flannan Lighthouse ran from 1896 to 1899, and it cost £7,000 to build. David Stevenson was a relative of Robert Louis Stevenson, and he was the person who designed it, and the contractor on the job was named George Lawson. The lighthouse officially started its duties in December of 1899.
And the lighthouse was owned by the Northern Lighthouse Board in Edinburgh, which is a company that at the time owned and operated more than 6 dozen lighthouses and employed 600 men. That company does still exist today, but those were its stats at the time.
The lighthouse was built on Eileen Moor, which is the largest of the 7 islands that make up the Flannans. And these are also called the 7 Hunters. Eileen Moor sits about 18 miles from Gallen Head on the west coast of Lewis in the Outer Hebrides.
This area, prior to there being a lighthouse there, had been extremely dangerous for merchant ships. And so that's really why there was cause for a lighthouse to be built. And for stats on the lighthouse itself, it was 75 feet tall. It still is, in fact. It stands at the top of a 150-foot cliff, and it's a pretty sheer drop-off to
kind of raging waters between the islands. And when it was built, it produced 100,000 candle power, and it flashed twice every 30 seconds. And those flashes were visible, theoretically, for a radius of 20 miles.
It was built to be incredibly sturdy, and it really had to be because it was sitting there on a rocky cliff in the North Atlantic.
And aside from the lighthouse keepers, there were no other inhabitants on the Flannans. If you look at pictures of them, there is pretty much empty, desolate rock. They're very small, and there's not really much you could do with that land.
It's desolate in a beautiful
way. Oh, it's lovely.
It's very remote. The wildlife in that area, some of it's really unique.
It's a very pretty area, but yeah, not so hospitable for people to make their lives there.
No. There was always a list of men willing to work the lighthouse, and it used a rotating schedule of two-week shifts. The duties of the men who were employed there by the Northern Lighthouse Board included polishing the lenses every day, keeping the mechanics working and clean, maintaining the buildings, and generally keeping the place tidy.
And because of the lack of radio contact at the time, the Northern Lighthouse Board had actually made a deal with a gamekeeper on the island of Lewis named Roderick Mackenzie, in which they would pay him £8 per year to keep an eye on the lighthouse, and he was instructed to report to the board's headquarters if the light ever went out.
So in mid-December of 1900, the lighthouse was manned by three people. There was James Ducat, the principal. He was 43, and he had 2 decades of lighthouse experience. He was also married and had 4 children. His second assistant was Thomas Marshall, and he was 28 and not married. Then Donald MacArthur was an occasional keeper, and he was sort of an alternate. He was serving for William Ross, who was the first assistant and was out on sick leave. So Donald was 40 and married.
And on December 15th of 1900, an American vessel, the SS Archtor, which was en route from Philadelphia to Leith, passed by Eileen Moore just before midnight. And the captain of that vessel, Captain Holman, noted that there was no light emanating from the lighthouse. And when the Archtor made port 3 days later, he reported that missing light to the port authorities. But for some reason, that information was never relayed to the Northern Lighthouse Board at that time. It just kind of died on the vine.
Yeah. And also in the for some reason category, gamekeeper Mackenzie also hadn't reported the outage to the board.
We'll actually come back to why that may have been the case in a bit. But that had been, again, on December 15th, and then they reported it 3 days later. But it wasn't until December 26th that someone arrives to check out the situation. And on that day, Captain James Harvey, who was aboard the Northern Lighthouse Board boat, the SS Hesperus, approached Eileen Moore. And on board with him was a man who had been intended to replace one of the three men stationed at the Flannan Lighthouse. So he was going to be a shift change, and they were going to rotate one man out. The Hesperus had actually been originally scheduled to make the relief personnel switch on December 20th, but because of adverse weather, they weren't able to stick to their schedule and they were delayed by several days.
At this point, the lighthouse had been dark for 11 days and people were really worried about what was going on.
No one welcomed Harvey's boat at the landing stage. So the captain, at first he blew the ship's whistle and siren, and then he fired a distress signal repeatedly so that he could alert the keepers of his arrival, but no response ever came. No one came down from the lighthouse.
Relief keeper Joseph Moore rowed ashore. He went up the cliff steps to the lighthouse. And it's worth noting that because no one was at the landing stage to help them, he had to kind of back into the landing and jump ashore. So this was a tricky maneuver and possibly dangerous.
Moore made his way to the lighthouse, and he proceeded initially to the kitchen. And there he found a few things that were a little off. He found an overturned chair, the remains of an unfinished meal, and a clock which had stopped. And that clock comes up a lot, this being one of those history mysteries. Some people want to give it some sort of supernatural element, like the clock stopped. But remember, clocks had to be wound at this time. So that's...
Yes.
That's really not a hint at anything supernatural going on.
It had wound down.
Yes.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
The beds were all made. The fire grate was cold. And Moore went on to investigate the rest of the lighthouse, but he couldn't find the keepers. There was a pet canary in a cage, which appeared not to have been fed for a while.
The lighthouse mechanism, though, appeared to be fully functional, so there was no mechanical problem that would cause it to go out. And Joseph Moore wrote a letter and his own description of the incident 2 days after this, which was on December 28th. And in it, he says, "On entering the kitchen, I looked at the fireplace and saw that the fire was not lighted for some days. I then entered the rooms in succession, found the beds empty just as they left them in the early morning. I did not take time to search further, for I only too well knew something serious had occurred. I darted out and made for the landing. When I reached there, I informed Mr. McCormick," as an aside, Mr. McCormick was the second mate of the Hesperus, "I informed Mr. McCormick that the place was deserted. He, with some of the men, came up a second time so as to make sure, but unfortunately, the first impression was only too true."
So after Moore reported back to the Hesperus that he couldn't find any sign of life at the lighthouse, more men from the boat joined him and started a thorough search of the small island. And there was no trace of the three missing men.
So Joseph Moore, along with three volunteers, which included an Alan McDonald, who was a buoy master, and two seamen, Mr. Lamont and Mr. Campbell, remained on the island to keep the lighthouse in operation while the investigation continued. Because while this mystery slash tragedy had occurred, they still had to warn ships away from the rocks.
Captain Harvey sent a telegram to the Northern Lighthouse Board telling them about the tragedy and letting them know that arrangements had been made for the lighthouse.
And then on December 29th, so 3 days after the initial discovery, Board Superintendent Robert Muirhead arrived at Eileen Moore to probe the matter. And he made arrangements for a new crew for the interim management of the lighthouse station, and then he set to the business of investigation.
He went through the lighthouse again, looking for clues, but he couldn't find anything suspicious aside from the overturned chair and the abandoned meal.
And the last slate entry, which was written on the morning of December 15th, had not yet been transferred to the log. So we've talked about this before, where often there's the book log, but what will often happen is on a chalkboard or a slate, they'll write down log entries before they transfer them down. It's kind of like an interim step. So that last slate entry, not in the log, included no extraordinary information. It was, you know, standard barometer, thermometer readings, and then notes about the wind conditions. But nothing jumped out as odd.
The work that would have been done the morning of the 15th had all been done. From Weirhead's report, the lamp was crimmed, the oil fountains and canteens were filled up, and the lens and machinery cleaned, which proved that the work of the 15th had been completed. So the afternoon of the 15th was pinpointed as the probable time of the disappearance.
And it was also noticed that only one set of wet weather gear was remaining in the building, and that was MacArthur's, which meant that Ducat and Marshall had been wearing theirs. And it also, you know, suggested that MacArthur went out in his shirt sleeves, which further suggested a possible emergency situation. Because remember, it's December.
Yes. Well, and then sort of imagining
in the North Atlantic.
Yes. It's like the logical conclusion is two men were outside in their wet weather gear. MacArthur was inside getting ready to eat. Knocked over the chair in his haste to exit. That sort of seems like a logical progression of events, but we don't really know.
Yeah.
According to lighthouse regulations, all three keepers were not supposed to be outside at the same time. Somebody always had to stay put inside the lighthouse. So something had caused them to break with their procedure.
There was coiled rope discovered strewn about the rocks below the crane platform, but the crane was secured, so that rope was not in use when the men disappeared. And the railings there were bent out of shape. There was also a block of stone that was estimated to weigh at least a ton that had been dislodged from the cliff wall and had fallen onto the landing stage.
Normally, all of this rope would have been stored in a box near the crane, but the box itself was missing. In the superintendent's report, he stated, quote, "The ropes were strewn in the crevices of the rocks near the crane platform and entangled among the crane legs, but they were all coiled up, no single coil being found unfastened." So it didn't really look like the ropes had been uncoiled in some sort of rescue effort.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when you read accounts of this incident, when they say that the ropes were strewn about, it, in my head, the first time I read about it, I was like, oh, they must have unfurled the ropes to try to reach someone. But then when you read Weirhead's report, it clearly says like, no, they were still all tied tight. They had just fallen out of their box.
They were sort of scattered haphazardly.
More scattered, yeah. And there had also been a life buoy that had been fastened to the railings, and it was gone, but it appeared to have been swept away rather than used for an emergency evacuation, because the fastening ropes that would have held it were still in place and tied with bits of canvas still attached to them, so it looked much more like a breakage than anyone had cut or unfurled them.
Weirhead's assessment theorized that three men probably tried to secure the wooden box during some rough weather and then were swept away by a large wave while they were trying to work. He wired his findings to his superiors and then called the widows of Ducat and MacArthur.
In his report, Weirhead notes that Joseph Moore was severely shaken by the events that had happened at Eileen Moore and stated, quote, "If this nervousness does not leave Moore, he will require to be transferred. But I am reluctant to recommend this, as I would desire to have one man at least who knows the work of the station." So at that point, because the other three men were gone, he wanted someone on shift who was familiar with that particular lighthouse and its workings.
He also investigated the seeming negligence of the gamekeeper, Mackenzie. So as we talked about earlier in the podcast, the light had been out for a while and he hadn't said anything about it. After first talking to Mackenzie's sons and then with Mackenzie himself and discovering that the light had not been seen between December 7th and 29th, he reported, quote, "Mackenzie stated, and I have since verified this, the light sometimes cannot be seen for 4 or 5 consecutive nights, but he was beginning to be anxious at not seeing it for such a long period and had, for 2 nights prior to its reappearance, been getting the assistance of the natives to see if it could be discerned. Had the lookout been kept by an ordinary lightkeeper, I believe it would have struck the man ashore at an earlier period that something was amiss, And while this would not have prevented the lamentable occurrence taking place, it would have enabled steps to have been taken to have the light relit at an earlier date. So he's basically chalking all of this up to the fact that Mackenzie was not an experienced lighthouse keeper. It was a problem of inexperience rather than just falling down on the job.
Right. Yeah. And Mackenzie, it turns out, had kept records and had noted these, you know, times when the lights would go dim, but they always came back. So.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
So that was Muirhead's report, and as Tracy mentioned earlier, based on the weatherproof gear being gone, it seems like two men went out to do something. Something took place and a third man left, which is basically kind of what Muirhead suggests. But despite that report, there are some sticking points that bother people that really love a good mystery and to theorize about other things. And some of those sticking points include...
Number one, none of the bodies ever washed back on shore.
And as the second one, the men were generally fairly experienced seamen and lighthouse keepers. It would be odd for them to be taken unawares by a wave. However, freak waves do happen in the North Atlantic as they do in other bodies of water. So it's conceivable that they could have just been surprised by a water wall whipping up.
It's also really not addressed why one of them would have been out in the December wet weather without his wet weather gear on.
Yeah, although, you know, there are lots of theories that pretty quickly explain that away.
Yeah, it seems pretty logical and believable that if there were a dire emergency, somebody could run out without their coat on.
Yeah. And while the tipped chair and the abandoned meal found in the kitchen suggested an emergency, the gate and the door to the lighthouse were actually closed when Joseph Moore first arrived there, which seems contradictory initially, but many have kind of written that off as it being entirely possible that the wind just blew them shut. It is a very windy area.
Another problem was that the weather on the day of the last entry in the lighthouse log, and the first time the light was noted to be missing, which was December 15th, that had been a clear day. There were storms the day after, but not on the 15th.
So again, if it were a weather thing, it would have to have been a freak wave. So because there are just enough question marks still on this story, many other theories and stories grew out of the mystery to explain what had happened to the keepers. And we'll do a short list of them. And some of them are very funny. But again, remember, three men did lose their lives. But some of these really are outlandish.
I find all of them to be very silly.
Yeah. One is that a foreign power had landed and captured the men, because lighthouse keepers are who you want to take prisoner.
Totally. Spaceships.
Spaceships. There were people theorizing that aliens had landed. Also, ghosts.
And alcoholic murder-suicide.
My favorite, the sea monster theory, that some sort of sea monster had come out of the North Atlantic and dragged them off.
Okay, this one's not actually funny, but maybe they were lost trying to help a vessel that was in distress.
Yeah, although to the best of my knowledge, there are no records of a distressed vessel happening at the same time.
No.
And the last one on our list, but there are more, is that they were carried off by giant birds.
There are only two things on this list that seem remotely feasible to me.
The murder-suicide or the lost while...
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to help another vessel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most people agree, I think, that one or two of the men likely went out to the landing stage to secure something, probably this box with the ropes in it, and was swept away, one or both of them, and that whoever was remaining went out to help and got swept away also.
At the end of his report, which was dated January 9th, 1901, Superintendent Muirhead said, "I was with the keepers for more than a month during the summer of 1899, when everyone worked hard to secure the early lighting of the station before winter. And working along with them, I appreciated the manner in which they performed their work. I visited Flannan Islands when the relief was made, so lately as 7th December, and have the melancholy recollection that I was the last person to shake hands with them and bid them adieu."
Yeah, that's... sort of an interesting point that adds color to this whole story is that Muirhead knew all of these men personally. He wasn't just like a bigwig from the company that came to look things over and write his report. He was investigating the deaths of men that he knew and appeared to have really liked. If you read his report, he really says very good things about them, even beyond that brief bit that Tracy just read. So it's a little bit extra melancholy to think of him, you know, having to investigate the death of people who were basically his friends. And born of this tragic incident, there have been a couple of interesting pieces of art. One is a poem entitled Flannan Isle, which was written in 1912 by Wilfred Wilson Gibson. And it tells the tale of a mystical force that turned the men into seabirds. There is another story that goes along with the landing of the Hesperus and Joseph Moore's exploration that says that Joseph Moore allegedly saw these three odd birds on the island when he first landed on December 26th. And that story is what provides the inspiration for that poem.
The opera, The Lighthouse, composed by Sir Peter Maxwell Davis, was also inspired by the vanishing at Flannan Isles. It debuted at the Edinburgh Festival in 1980. This version becomes more about the tension among the three men trapped together at the lighthouse.
Yeah, it almost goes along with the alcoholic murder-suicide theory. I have not actually seen that opera, but it seems to be much more about interpersonal communication and the drama of that. And the Flannan Lighthouse still stands. It remained manned peacefully and without incident. So for all of the stories of the islands being haunted, didn't seem to have any effect on the functioning of the lighthouse. It continued to be manned by a crew until September 28th of 1971. And at that point, the lighthouse at Eileen Moor became what's called a major automatic light. So it's fully automated. It's unmanned. It receives maintenance visits and annual inspections, but it doesn't have a crew that stays there.
In 2000, the three lost lighthouse keepers were commemorated in a ceremony attended by residents, relatives, and officials from the Northern Lighthouse Board.
And mystery lovers, of course, still bandy about theories as to what really happened on December 15th of 1900, although I think most historians accept some variation of Muirhead's report, that it was really just sort of an unfortunate accident that happened while trying to secure something at the crane and the landing stage.
I think I would have liked to have been a lighthouse keeper.
You think? Mm-hmm. Allegedly, this one of the reasons they always have people wanting the job is that compared to other jobs at the time, it was a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah.
When you had to be away from your family, but you know, basically got free room and board during that time. It wasn't particularly horrible or arduous work. If you had any experience with the sea, it probably seemed pretty easy by comparison.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really good job to have.
Yeah. All those solitary jobs that don't really exist anymore, like lighthouse keeper or the people who man firewatch towers in forests.
Yeah.
Like all of those.
You want them.
They're pretty appealing to me.
I see the appeal of them, but I would go a little crazy after a bit.
Yeah.
I think.
Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday. If you have heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of today's episode, since it is from the archive, that might be out of date now. You can email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. And you can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.